Only months before, he was a young man with a future. His high school grades were excellent. His particular academic interests included English literature and history, science, even theology. One day, he would become a minister, he told his friends. In fact, he had already made definite plans to attend Yale Divinity School. And Will was a splendid all-around athlete. He played baseball and hockey and football. As a gymnast, he was incomparable. And then, all at once, as though a star of ill omen had crossed Will's horizon, everything changed. It was March of his senior year. Will was playing hockey with a high school varsity team. The opposing team was comprised of the sons of officers from a nearby army installation. Will got in close with one of the opponents. Suddenly, the other youngster's stick swung back, smashed Will in the face. Stunned fellow teammates rushed to Will's side, knelt around him in a circle on the ice. The boy's mouth was a mass of bloody pulp. Nearly all of his upper front teeth and many of the lower ones had been knocked out. An army surgeon cleansed and dressed Will's wound. The patient was taken home. And just as it seemed that he was about to recover from that, Will was stricken with a severe stomach disorder. And then, as he was about to recover from that, heart trouble. And Will was confined to his home, a semi-invalid. All that he had once looked forward to was lost. There would be no more sports, no more school, no future plans for the ministry. To himself and to his family, it was evident that Will was handicapped for life. Come down came hard. Fearing that the slightest exertion would explode his already weakened heart, Will remained anxiously inactive. His once high spirits took on the ballast of despair and began to sink until at last he was haunted by one morbid thought day and night. He would die young. Young Will's life had taken a dramatic turn from hope to hopelessness. Until that winter of his senior year in high school, he'd been a vigorous athlete. The excellence of his academic record, combined with his aspiration to attend Yale Divinity School, assured him of a rewarding career in the ministry. And suddenly, this series of serious physical ailments brought an end to his dreams. Will became a semi-invalid, withdrawn from the world which once had held such promise, living in constant fear of an early death, and the years passed. Most enjoyment in life, he said, consisted of relief from discomfort. But then one day, 8 long years after the torment had begun, Will's younger brother, hoping to lift Will from the depths of his despair, suggested a joint business venture. Will would not have to exert himself. He could be the brains of the outfit. His brother would handle most of the physical labor, and Will accepted. Young Will, theretofore handicapped and confined, was to emerge from the prison of his own dread and literally, take to the skies. And he took us with him. History begins the story of these two enthusiastic brothers in a bicycle shop. What you have just heard is what came before the bicycle shop. Separately, the brothers would have accomplished little. Together, and because of Orville's deep concern over Wilbur's will to live, together, they became the Wright brothers. And now you know the rest of the story.
This hour of Sound Off on KPRL brought to you by Buy the Book Heating and Air, your local reliable heating and air expert. Call 805-423-5119.
238-5775. 238-KPRL. Sound Off continues on KPRL, the North County's number one choice for news, talk, and sports. This is Sound Off on the Right Choice, KPRL.
All right, so we're back. Call in and give us your views. We're going to wrap. We're going to finish up with at least the national election and disintegrity, lack of integrity topics. But this all kind of ties in together. And I think the picture that I'm hoping that we're painting is even though these things are in national news and outside of the local area. If the system is as corrupt and broken as it's being presented, it trickles down to the local area. So whether it's, you know, city council or county council meetings where you are, you know, arguing over whether you should have or whether you should bar federal law enforcement from your local county, or whether you're a school board that should give money to the teachers union that keeps voting in the people that are destroying the value of your dollar and everything else in the state. This is all kind of interconnected. So
I say, too, with regard to the national level, when if you are someone that is somewhat interested or now starting to pay attention, the reason why Fulton County, Georgia is so important is because we're getting testimony from Eric Coomer, who is with Dominion Voting Systems, now Liberty Vote, I guess. And Eric Coomer is admitting that he, in testimony, that he did coordinate with foreign actors. And as I've been saying, we have that 2018 Executive Order 13848 that is still in play, has been renewed every single year, even in the, quote, Biden administration. So we have a call. Welcome, you are on the air. Would you like to change the topic, or would you like to talk about elections at the national and local level?
I'd like to jump back to the question of counties handling ICE coming in. And, you know, Kenny mentioned it a minute ago, but up in Monterey County, I live just north of the county line, and there's a supervisor up there grandstanding about that people don't have to open their homes for ICE warrants. And it's an obscure topic maybe, but it's pretty important, because the last thing we need is more people creating more drama around the deportation effort. So I'd just be interested to hear your thoughts.
Thank you. And that is one of the items that we did want to talk about. And have you seen or heard, maybe through KPRL, if you're listening in the morning, any of the results of the San Luis Obispo County Supervisors meeting on Tuesday?
I have not. I heard it was coming up, and that I believe the sheriff was going to be speaking, but I didn't hear any follow-up on that.
Okay, well, I actually attended most of the meeting. It went on, there were about 4 hours of public comment. They were in 1 minute, 2 minute, and 3 minute intervals that you could select which you wanted to do. But the sheriff made a very, I believe, excellent and open, transparent conversation about what has occurred in the last year and how that differed from what used to occur. Years ago, they would have hundreds of criminals. And when I say criminals, I mean people who have been arrested and in jail for murder, theft, grand theft, robbery. I mean, these are sexual issues, sex with minors. I mean, it's the hardcore list. So as those people, if they have been charged with one of those crimes, in addition to their immigration status not being able to be verified, in addition to that, as they're being released, then ICE must be notified. And if ICE is present, then as the sheriff and the sheriff's department releases these people from jail, then ICE can pick them up and detain them, arrest them for the other crimes, and potentially deport them. So Tuesday's meeting sounds similar to, you have a supervisor in Monterey County. We have Supervisor Gibson, the one that supposedly won by 13 votes. I just have to insert that. Supervisor Gibson indicating that, well, you know, we can make county that somehow the Board of Supervisors can dictate to the sheriff what he can and can't do. So that was what a lot of the testimony was. It was very full. They've been advertising on indivisible.org, and they've been advertising on 805 UndocuFund and through all the organizations to come and support the anti-ICE protesters, and that, you know, the sheriff shouldn't be able to do these things. And I tried to point out in I only had 2 minutes, and mentally I need 3 minutes. But I tried to point out that by constitutional law, that the federal government, the supremacy clause indicates that the sheriff must cooperate. There's not a single sheriff, and what I have heard from our Sheriff Parkinson, and again, I thought he did a very good presentation, but from what I have heard from him, there's not a single sheriff in all 58 counties of California that's willing to not comply with a federal warrant. So then they talk about, well, is it a judicial warrant or is it an administrative warrant? If it is a judicial warrant signed by a federal judge, I guarantee you there's not a single sheriff in any county in California that's going to disregard that, because you and I probably know that is treason. And there used to be very serious ramifications of treason.
Yes, there have been. You mentioned Benedict Arnold earlier. But I just want to point out to listeners, there was a Wall Street Journal editorial, well, a commentary published in the Wall Street Journal by the general counsel for the Department of Homeland Security explaining that the use of administrative warrants by ICE comes with it. It is a follow-up to a removal order, a final removal order. And at that point, a human being is not in the criminal justice system. The order from a judge is they must be put outside the boundaries of the United States.
Yeah, it's a civil matter.
Yeah, this is a really important thing that somebody like Alex Preddy was obviously out of control and didn't have any kind of handle on, and that propaganda propagated by Luis Aleo up in Monterey County is just, it's sinister. So thanks for having your show, guys.
Thank you so much for calling in. Yeah, and it's actually very dangerous thinking, because think if you have your own home. And it's one thing to welcome people into your home, but it's quite another to tell other people that they have to welcome people into their homes.
Yeah.
So
to get back to a point that the caller was making over the different types of warrants, I listened yesterday to an interview of Senator from South Carolina, Lindsey Graham, and you know, Lindsey Graham he started to advocate, and I think this is part of what's reached, which is leading to the compromise. Basically saying, sure, if you want to reform ICE, then what we need to do is reform the law. And you know, current law basically says, to paraphrase what the caller said, you know, you have your criminal warrant, which is going to be served on the felon in the county jail. And you show up with your criminal warrant, and the local authorities or state authorities have to respond to that if it's a federal criminal warrant. Now, there are these administrative warrants, which I didn't really understand that process, but paraphrasing what I heard yesterday from Lindsey Graham is, you have a list. If you are on that list as having already appeared in front of the court and violated your terms for being in the United States, you don't get to go back to court. That's on an that's a list that they're going to be able to pick you up and take you to a deportation facility, and you're gone. The other one is administrative, that you have to show up for a civil hearing, and the government doesn't even have to provide you with a defense attorney because it's not criminal. It's because it's civil. You show up in front of the magistrate, and the magistrate says, you were supposed to be gone 3 months ago, or you were supposed to be here 3 months ago in front of my court to determine, and you violated that, so you're gone. And so what Lindsey Graham is saying is basically, make them all, you know, criminal. Make them all criminal warrants. Do away with the civil process altogether. And I don't think the Democrats are going to really be happy with that either. But it would clear it if the feds show up and everything is a criminal warrant, which is essentially what the Democrats are asking for now, solves the problem.
Well, and unfortunately, what's happening too is that many of these, quote, migrants or undocumented immigrants are being exploited. And I look at it as, you know, they're the true pawns in this whole thing. It's follow the money. It's about money, and it's about voters.
Well, it's about they are being exploited, and you know, the Alex Preddies and what's her name Good, who died in Minneapolis. I think they were being exploited as well. You know, the left doesn't care about their lives; they want to use their deaths, and that's a standard tactic.
That's a good way to put it.
That's a standard tactic that's used, whether it's Hamas in Gaza or ISIS and Al Qaeda in Iraq, or whether it's the FARC in Colombia. You know, I saw personally in Iraq and Colombia both Islamic terrorists and communist Marxist terrorists using children, and they would put these children in front of a military force, knowing the military force would kill them. And they did it specifically so they could say, hey, look at this military force just killed these poor children. That's exactly what Hamas has done for decades with Israel. And I would argue that, you know, the Democrat Party is complicit in the deaths of Preddy and Good in Minneapolis. And, to bring it back, I got interviewed last week by Fox News. I got called and was asked to make a statement over the L.A. superintendent of schools saying that, you know, the federal government is raiding schools, that they're coming in and they're using tear gas on students and taking students, which is the biggest bunch of BS. And it was the California Federation of Teachers is quoted as having said that in the article as well. And they asked if we had seen any decline in enrollment because of fears of the feds hitting the schools. And I'm like, I cannot think of one scenario where the feds would come into the school to take a student. Maybe they would wait outside and wait for a parent. The only way I could see them coming into the school is if one of the school employees is an illegal alien and is wanted for on some sort of federal warrant. And I have to say, you know, Paso Robles Joint Unified School District, I've reviewed the policies and the administrative regulations myself, and I think they're good. It states, you know, you will acknowledge, you will cooperate with law enforcement no matter who they are with or where they are from, and that's the correct answer. But what angers me the most about statements from the California Teachers Federation and the superintendent of schools in Los Angeles, it gets back to fear-mongering. You are preying on people that, you know, are vulnerable. And you're preying on the kids, inciting fear in them that's, you know, hey, any minute, you know, a big
knock on the door.
Yeah, no. A big guy's going to come and knock on your door. And it's only to serve their own political purposes. It is not for the good of the community. I don't know how this is all going to play out with immigration. I don't think the feds are going to waste their time raiding schools or stopping people on the street. You know, are they going to go after the hardcore criminals? Yeah, they are. And is that going to incentivize some of the I'm just going to use the phrase law-abiding illegal aliens. Is that going to incentivize some of them to leave? Yeah, it is. But eventually you're going to get down to the point where you have people that their only violation is the fact that they didn't follow the process. And that's where it's going to get really hard, I think, in this country, where you're going to have to decide, what are we going to do with these people? You know, have they been here for 25 years and never gotten into trouble? Okay, well, I'm going to be sympathetic to them, honestly, and say, I don't have any problem with them staying.
Part of the community, yeah. Hardworking, the whole...
But if it's, you know, if it's a guy who's got like 3 DUIs and is trafficking everything and anything or anybody, get rid of them. And I don't understand why you've got, you know, Bruce
criminals.
Gibson or any other county supervisor thinking that this is good for the community. You are endangering your local community by refusing to cooperate with law enforcement. And if they're, you know, I keep going back to the fact, the young boy David that died in the parking lot at the Paso Robles Inn. His father, David should not have been here, and his father should not have been here. And nobody has ever bothered to answer the question as to why, after 9 or 10 complaints from schools in Cambria and in Paso Robles to law enforcement that there were signs of physical abuse. Why wasn't anything done? Why wasn't David's father arrested and put in jail? Why was there a complaint? You know, why was David in police custody days before and then given back to the father? I mean, that's a death that could have been avoided right here in Paso Robles.
And even on that case, then we started getting more information that he had used someone else's credit card and made charges on their credit card. And so you had, and it was in excess of $950, whatever the quote petty theft is. But the whole point is that there were other crimes being committed that you and I would be held accountable for. Yeah.
And here's my biggest criticism of law enforcement, of ICE and the death of Alex Preddy. On the 13th, Alex Preddy committed multiple felonies against law enforcement. He should have been arrested at that point. And if he had, I suspect he'd still be alive. But you know, we've created this fear of we've created these protected classes essentially. And if you're an illegal, you know, we're gonna protect you. If you're a leftist protester, we're gonna protect you. And it justice has a blindfold and a scale for a reason. And you know, right now it's evident to me that the Democrat Party has their finger on the scale and they're, you know, taking the blindfold up off of one eye. So,
well, and even though we can't actually put a number on how many millions of people have come across our borders and are now within the United States into many cities and the whole affordable housing and subsidized housing and the voting blocks, et cetera. We have to be able to look at that and say, this has been a huge, huge problem. It is a soft coup. It's trying to undermine our systems. And we have to be able to look at it and address it and find some way to turn it around.
Yeah, that Peter Schweitzer's book is not The Silent Coup. It's called The Invisible Coup. All right, short break. We'll be right back.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Maria Bartiromo, and this is the Fox Business Report.
The major averages ending lower, but pairing from bigger earlier losses on this last day of trading of the month after President Trump nominated former Federal Reserve Governor Kevin Warsh as the next Fed chair to replace Jerome Powell in May. The appointment requires Senate confirmation. Warsh has a hawkish record on interest rates, but has recently voiced support for cuts, which President Trump has aggressively campaigned for. In the meantime, producer prices rose more than expected in December, suggesting that inflation may pick up, while gold prices plunged for their worst one-day decline on record amid profit-taking. Tech was the worst performer among the S&P 500 sectors. The Dow winners Chevron, Home Depot, and Verizon. The Dow decliners Visa, Caterpillar, and American Express. The Dow down 179 points. The Nasdaq lower by 223. S&P 500 down 30. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
New Year's resolutions sound great on January 1st, but January 10th, not so much. This year, there's one resolution worth keeping, getting your finances in order. For many people, that starts with balance, not just growth, but protection too. And that's where Noble Gold Investments comes in. For over a decade, they've made it easy for investors to add gold and silver to their portfolios and reduce market risk. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com, NobleGoldInvestments.com. Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals involves risk. Consult with your tax or financial professional before making investment decisions.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
When it comes to sustainable energy systems and service, Central Coast residents trust Solarponics. Marilyn from Templeton says, quote, Solarponics installed our system almost 20 years ago. There are occasions when your system needs to be serviced. With Solarponics, work is completed quickly with knowledge and skill. This is as important a part of a solar company as the original installation. Thank you, Marilyn, for your Google review. When we install a sustainable energy system, we're installing a lifetime of as important service. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
Attention Central Coast homeowners. Is your water heater over 7 years old? If so, replace it with a heat pump water heater before it fails and save thousands in energy costs. Plus, new rebates cover up to 80% of the cost. Call or click to get a free, no-hassle quote today. Don't just go solar, go Solarponics. Solarponics.com.
The Sound Off lines are open at 238-5775. 238-KPRL. The North County's listening to you on Sound Off.
All right, Colin, if you want to change the topic, but we're gonna get into more and more of my favorite topic, which is education. But also, you know, looking at how all this ties into the declining financial state of the state.
That can be one of my favorite topics, is follow the money.
Yeah. So the supposedly on Sunday, all sanctuary cities and states are going to lose federal funding.
February 1st,
which is Sunday. Mm-hmm. And for I don't know how that's going to affect the FY 25-26 budget. But the other thing that I've been talking about for months now is the threat to loss of federal funds for education. So right now, California yesterday was found guilty of violating parents' 14th Amendment rights. This goes back to really the Mirabelli versus Olson case, which Judge Benitez ruled in favor of the plaintiffs, and that their rights were violated by forcing them to lie to parents. And then there were,
imagine that.
And then parents also were part of the class action suit. And Benitez found that the state had lied. And the state lied by telling, which really ticked off the judge. It's probably not a good idea to lie to a judge and have the judge catch you in it. But the state said, no, we're not telling school districts anymore that they have to do the PRISM training. And this PRISM training is an online training that was mandated by the legislature last year, I believe, pretty recently. And in the training, you have to acknowledge that you will not notify parents of your students' gender dysphoria. And it was brought to the attention of the court that even though the state was telling the judge, oh, no, we're not doing that, it was brought to the attention of the court that, yeah, they are. And so that really hacked off the judge. Judge ruled against the state. State filed an appeal, which caused the three-judge panel from the Ninth Circuit to file an injunction against Benitez's ruling, which was a pretty awesome ruling. Now you've got the U.S. Department of Education basically piling on, saying, no, the state of California is not only violating parental rights, but also First Amendment rights. I know that here in Paso, I think the state requirement was that everybody had to complete their PRISM training if you were an educator by today. And I know that there are teachers at Paso that are refusing to do it.
And just for clarification, this is PRISM, P-R-I-S-M.
Yeah, it's an acronym, and I don't know. I don't speak acronym.
Not PRISM.
Well, yeah, which is where we want some people to go. But I don't know what the acronym stands for. I just know it's a training program. But anyways, the U.S. Department of Education also piled on yesterday and said that, you know, the state of California has violated parental rights by acknowledging and directing that educators and school districts maintain two sets of files. One set for the parents to see, and one set that has all the secret information on the child. Well, that's a violation of FERPA, which is the Family Education Rights Protection Act. And you actually have some local school districts, not Paso for once, but you have some local school districts that in their administrative regulation 5145.3, it specifically states that we will maintain a second set of books, one for the parents to look at and one that shows what we're actually doing with the student, with the secret gender identities and names, etc. And so those idiots, which are, we'll say, just south of here, put it in writing. And, you know, if there's any parent whose child has been transed socially in a local school district, I would encourage you to look at AR 5145.3, Administrative Regulation 5145.3, and see what the wording is at the end of the paragraph or the end of the administrative regulation, because there are a couple of them that say specifically, lie to the parents. So, what's the old Chinese curse? May you live in interesting times. So, on the break, we were talking about the finances of the state. So, federal funding for the state of California, I want to say, is like $80 billion a year is how much federal funding there is.
One of the statistics that I know is that California represents about 11 to 12% of the population, but is consistently receiving 15 to 16% of the federal funding, of the funds from the federal government go to California State.
Yeah, I'm looking at Grok right now. Grok says $140 billion. That would be devastating for the state of California to lose that much. It's $8 billion in education funds. And the impact here locally in Paso Robles is $5.2 million. And that $5.2 million goes away, we'll wind up back under county or state control. We're having a hard enough time.
Well, think about it. Even if it goes under county or state control, the county gets 40% of its budget, 35 to 40% of its budget from the state.
Yeah,
and the state is out of money. We have, when I talk about New California State and people have asked me about it, the reason why we are where we are and that New California State has come about as a movement and as a possibility is because of the funding, and that California State is, what, $18 billion deficit just for this year's budget.
Right.
And we are now up to hundreds of billions of dollars in the unemployment fraud with the EDD. We have the Train to Nowhere, which has huge overpasses that are not connected on either side.
Well, I did some back of the cocktail napkin math the other night when I was looking at the number $750 billion in potential fraud.
I said 800. So.
That works out to be roughly $20,000 per person in the state of California. So that family of four that's barely getting by and, you know, is about to get hit with a new mileage tax, that would have been $80,000 in your pocket. Or that's basically $80,000, not necessarily in your pocket, but $80,000 that should have gone to you. And instead, it's vanished. Nobody has any idea for it. But, you know, back to your point, the state is out of money. And the state is, and the people, like, to go back to Paso Robles Public Educators, who are not really one of my favorite groups, you know, they were basically screaming at the school board the other night saying, you're not paying us enough to keep up with the cost of living. Well, then stop voting for Democrats all the time. Go ahead, caller. You're on the air.
Yeah. You know, you all have been talking about immigration, budgets, the state of California, education. And, you know, immigration and out-of-control immigration has been happening in California for 30 years. I mean, this isn't a new phenomenon.
Right.
And it amazes me. You know, this state has been run into the ground by people who want it run into the ground. This isn't a mistake. This is a strategy.
No, I agree with you.
They've taken down California. They're going after Texas now. This is a strategy. It's been going on for a long time. Now, Joe Biden opened up the floodgates and really flooded the zone to overwhelm the system, and that's what he did. And it was a strategy, but he didn't do it because he didn't know if he was even alive. But the bottom line is, the people of California have just ignored this, and they allow people who have broken our immigration laws, and these are not innocent people. If they've come into the country more than once, those are felonies. Once you've been deported once and you come back, that is a felony. And they're also, remember, everybody needs to remember this. When you go to work in this country, you have to fill out I-9 documents. It's a federal requirement. And a lot of those people are using false Social Security numbers and a lot of other ID theft in order to get employment. Those are felonies.
Right.
And I'm sick and tired of people minimizing the effects of illegal immigration, saying, oh, they're just trying to find a better life and blah, blah, blah. Well, that may or may not be the case. But the bottom line is they've disrespected our laws. They've come here. They've driven, and the people who are their willing accomplices, like a city council member here in the city of Paso Robles, I was the only one who went to that meeting and chastised her and asked them to do something to her so that it was made very clear that that wasn't acceptable. I was the only one who went to that meeting and pushed back against the lawless one, Chris Beal. While she's sitting up there, little Miss Muffet, acting as though, oh, she's so nice and she's so caring, she put people at risk.
And explain to the listeners, I know exactly what happened, but she... Explain to them how she was included and what she was speaking out about.
She posted something on her Facebook page, which she's used during her campaign to encourage people to push back and to alert the neighborhood that ICE was in the neighborhood, asking them to bear witness, as I think the term she used,
yes.
Basically saying, do what you can to try to undermine ICE's efforts here in the city. Now, that to me is a violation of her oath. She swore an oath to protect and defend, and she swore an oath to get follow the law. And she didn't do that. And so in sleepy Paso Robles, where we have people that are always pushing back, calling this radio station and jumping up and down about how bad things, at that city council meeting, I was the only one who was there to push back against her. And I'm going to say something else. She had her followers there, her willing accomplices from the Democrat Party, to support her.
Let me piggyback off of that real quick, because this is a pattern that I've seen around the country, and this really gets into what I'm seeing is really more of an insurrection. And this is, I'm going to read a quick quote from a post that I read from a retired special ops officer, and it talks about the signal groups, and it says signal groups, and this is about Minneapolis and how they organized resistance in Minneapolis, and there are a lot of similarities to what Chris Beal did and what's going on here locally. But it says signal groups at 1,000 member cap per zone, and they had dedicated roles: mobile chasers, plate checkers, logging vehicle data into shared databases, 24/7 dispatch nodes, vectoring assets, salute style reporting. And salute report is size, activity, location, unit, time, equipment. So it's basically a situation report on suspected federal vehicles. That same stuff's going on here. Daily chat rotations, yep, and time deletions to frustrate forensic recovery, vetting processes for new joiners, mutual aid from sympathetic locals, teachers providing cover, possible police department tip-offs. I mean, it's a serious network. And this guy goes on in his podcast. He said, he's basically saying, dude, I spent my entire career dismantling these things in foreign countries, and I'm home in the United States, and they're here. While I was off defending the frontiers of the empire is crumbling from within.
That's right. And you have willing accomplices like Chris Dill and her minions, who are the Democrat club here in Paso Robles, and these people are working to undermine your country.
Yeah.
And nobody speaks out. Nobody comes publicly to tell these people.
I think it's because we're not as organized. Hey, we're coming up on a break, but excellent points, sir.
Thank you for calling in, and thank you for attending that meeting. And speaking.
At Peak Painting, we get it. Hiring contractors can be frustrating. Missed calls, no callbacks, endless waiting for even a price. We do things different. You can book your quote right on the spot. And to top that off, you will have a detailed quote and price before we leave. Painting is easier with Peak.
Hi, I'm Seth Peak.
And I'm Ryan Peak.
And we're the Peak Brothers. From cabinet painting to interior painting.
Exterior painting, both residential and commercial.
We're your go-to family-owned and operated painting company serving all of Slo County. We look forward to working with you. To learn more and book your appointment, visit Peak Painting at peekpainting.com.
Do you use propane for your home or business? Family-owned and operated, Delta Liquid Energy has provided local area residents with dependable and courteous propane service since 1936. From home heating and cooking to powering your irrigation engine pump or forklift, propane can do it all. Don't forget their location. Paso Robles refills propane bottles of all sizes Monday through Friday and has a dump station for your RV. Learn more. Call Delta Liquid Energy 805-239-0616 or go online. DeltaLiquidEnergy.com.
This is Billy Gallant with your locally owned and operated H&R Block office. As local accountants retire, many taxpayers are left wondering where to turn. H&R Block is ready when you need a trusted expert. With experienced tax professionals, your local H&R Block delivers reliable help year after year, no matter how the tax laws change. You'll get knowledgeable service, clear pricing, and flexible options to file. So if your old tax preparer is stepping away, step confidently into tax season with H&R Block. Trusted expertise that's here to stay. Call your local H&R Block office today to make an appointment.
All right, we're back. Got a few minutes left. But, you know, to continue discussion of the caller's points about Chris Beal and
as city council.
As a city council member showing up at these, or really being complicit or participating in these ICE, anti-ICE events. When I look around the country, and I would argue the same here locally in San Luis Obispo County and Paso Robles, what these Democrat politicians are doing by refusing to allow local law enforcement to operate or cooperate with federal law enforcement, in my opinion, is putting the local population at risk. If you look around the country right now, I read an article the other day, you've got more illegal aliens being rounded up in Texas and Florida and red states, and you haven't heard about one riot or one incident. It's in the blue states where, by not allowing federal law enforcement access to the jail, or by not cooperating with federal law enforcement in arresting somebody that's wanted, you're putting the entire community at risk. And I would argue even, you know, from the point of view of
infringing on our rights.
Infringing on our rights. But also, if your intent is to, quote, in air quotes, Darsha can testify.
I can see it.
The air quotes. If you're interested in protecting the poor, innocent, illegal alien, then the last thing you should be doing probably is allowing these horrible bands of jackbooted ICE agents to roam around, air quotes up, roam around the countryside.
Those are their words.
Their words. So everything they're doing, in my opinion, again, they don't care about these people. Maybe they care about them in terms of potentially being voters someday. Maybe they care about them because it's a source of revenue for municipalities that are losing their funds. But honestly, I hate to be the cynic, but they don't care about them. They are more concerned about creating an event, a tragedy, and then using their deaths to foment rebellion. And if you are an elected politician, a school board member, a city council person, or a county supervisor, and you're getting sucked into this, then you are one of Lenin's useful idiots, as far as I'm concerned.
There's been four initials going around, FAFO, but the unfortunate part is the currency that supports all of this uprising, say, just look at Black Lives Matter, look at what's happening in Minneapolis, and isn't it interesting? It's the same elements every single time. So there's the inciting of violence, and call it the insurrection. You can call it seditious behavior. You can call it insurrection. You can call it all of those things. But it is going on right here in our town. And every Saturday when there's the local protests, I know people that are at farmers market that their business is being harmed because the really great local events come out and protest, come with us and protest ICE. You know, they're kidnapping people and they're disappearing people off our streets. These are our neighbors and families and friends. And, you know, we have farmers market people who are selling their local amazing products that are being blocked because there's people in front of the entrance and the exits. And those are things that need to be followed up with the Paso PD so that every farmer's market, every business, every commerce, you know, to allow the commerce to go on because you are now infringing upon their rights. And so I know the sheriff made in his presentation that he is there to keep the peace. His department represents, you know, the entire county, but representing the rights of the people. So where you have a situation where you have a gathering of people that are protesting ICE, and you have a group of people that are there to do business and to have their products and their wares, you know, purchased by the public, and the public does no longer has access to that, then the rights of the people who are conducting their business also need to be considered. So what I have been, I was up in Redding, Shasta County last week, wanted to just mention that New California State has been moving forward. Laura Logan from CBS 60 Minutes, as some call it 61 Minutes now, because they added in for Kamala. But international journalist, she has been a war correspondent, I'll call her, for years and years and years. And she's become someone that has been canceled as well. New California State will have a reorganized California convention at Madonna Inn next Friday night is the VIP dinner with Laura Logan and Patrick Wood, who wrote Trilaterals Over Washington. Amazing understanding of the technocracy and where we're going with that. So he'll have Laura Logan and Patrick Wood will be Friday night for a VIP dinner at Madonna Inn. You can, and then Saturday will be additional speakers, including them, but additional speakers all on the state of the state, what New California State would mean. They declared independence back in 2018. There's a voted on New California State Constitution. and all of the paperwork has been put in place that if it goes to the president and Congress, where we are in the state of California right now has opened the door for the possibility for having new California state come in. So I just recommend that if people want to find out more about the convention that's happening next weekend on the 6th and 7th and to see Laura Logan in person, it was amazing. She talked for two and a half hours, just Q&A and just all of her experiences. It's unbelievable what she has been through. You can go to newcaliforniastate.com under events. You'll see the San Luis Obispo event on February 6th and 7th. So I highly recommend it. And if anybody wants to contact me and want more information, please do so. But I just would love to have people recognize that what you're hearing nationally, when it has to do with the school boards, it has to do with the elections, has to do with the money and the fraud and the corruption. We have everything you might want to discover right here in our little sleepy town and right here in San Luis Obispo County. So please take a look at it. I know Kenny says, oh, it'll never happen. But here's my thing.
Well, no, I'm going to interrupt. So here's my thing. So historically, you guys are trying to follow the West Virginia model, correct?
Correct.
All right. So for all the listeners, we only got like 2 minutes, so I got to be fast.
Excellent.
So 1861, Virginia secedes from the Union. And you had, and I forgot what the vote was. I used to know all the stuff by heart, being a member of Sons of Confederate Veterans. But there were multiple votes, and finally the Virginia State House of Burgesses votes to secede from the Union. But it was always like 45 or 50 counties that were in basically west of the Shenandoah that did not want to go along with that. And that was primarily because you didn't have slaves in that part of the state. They, so that secession vote, I think, was in April 1861, probably in the fall of summer or fall of 1861, you had some former senator that decided.
Pierpont.
Witt or something like that, White Witt. But they had their convention of those counties that did not want to secede.
Now, reorganized Virginia is what they're called.
Yeah, and that's what they eventually. So they voted to secede. Now, here's the big flaw, in my opinion, on what you guys are doing. Virginia had already seceded from the Union, and so they didn't get a vote anymore. In order for this theory and process to work out, in my opinion, the state of California has to be in open rebellion, which it's not yet. I would rather we work on keeping California from going into open rebellion. And then if they do, I will be the biggest proponent for New California.
I have absolutely done as much, if not everything I can, to have California be in a state that we would want to stay instead of having 200 plus public entities.
But based off of the Constitution, the state that's losing the territory or from which that new state is going to be created, that legislature has a vote. And then it also has to be approved by the U.S. Congress and ultimately signed off by the President of the United States, if I remember the process correctly.
But, excellent.
So right now, California is not in a state of open rebellion.
Okay, so that's
and
where...
Because it's not in a state of open rebellion, the U.S. Congress is going to go back to the state legislature and ask the state legislature what they want to do. Now, I think if it were like state of Jefferson, then, you know, the Sacramento would say, yeah, those hayseed hicks. And I mean that with true affection because I would rather live in the state of Jefferson probably. But they would probably say, go. But a San Luis Obispo County, they're not going to let us go. And my concern is, based off of your plan, we're going to get stuck on the wrong side of the border.
San Luis Obispo County is included in the new California state map. It would basically be a split between the population. I mean, there are some challenges, but
well, that's the other problem with your theory, then, because in the Constitution, you have to have contiguous borders for a new state,
like Hawaii, like Michigan.
Those are islands, but they have a state boundary in the water.
All right, we will continue this discussion, but please.
All right, you can tell which side of the debate we're on. Have a great weekend.
Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution. I argue that we are in a state where we are not allowed to have a Republican form of government, freedom from invasion, and protection against domestic violence. We'll see.
All right. Thanks for listening.
We'll
take this up
next
Friday.
We'll be back next week.
This hour of Sound Off was brought to you by Mid-State Precious Metals across the parking lot from the movie theater in Atascadero. Honest, veteran-owned. Buy or sell precious metals with integrity. Monday through Friday, 10 to 3.
AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.